Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle. And sitting in once again for the professor is our buddy Paul Moyer, who you hear on the Seahawks pre-halftime post-game show on this very station. He's with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. What's going on, Paul?
Well, just recovering from the Super Bowl and hanging out in Dallas, Texas, which is pretty interesting to go to places where the Super Bowl is here because they love football here.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who's playing.
Yeah, I mean, they got stadiums for their high school teams out there. But, hey, let's talk about the game. Who did you like going into the game and just coming out of it before we get into the specifics? What did you think of the game itself? Is it one of the better Super Bowls? Is it middle of the pack? How'd you have it ranked?
No, I think from a fan standpoint, it was a great game. I thought San Francisco was the best team, most consistent team all year. I thought that they would win just because their strengths were Kansas City's weaknesses, and I thought some of Kansas City's strengths played into San Francisco's strengths as well, particularly, in the pass defense. But, at the end of the day, the fourth quarter, playmakers, great quarterbacks find ways to win Super Bowls, and we found Garoppolo is not ready quite for that moment, and, Patrick Mahomes, who I thought played horrible. I mean, that was one of the worst games I'd seen him play, but, when he needed to make the plays in the fourth quarter, he got it done.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. There was a lot of sort of lollipop throws and late and wobbly. But like you said, he got it done, and a lot with his feet too. I mean, just moving around. Let me ask you this, Paul, from a coach's standpoint, as you were, for how long were you coach for the Seahawks?
Like 5 years.
5 years, yeah. I remember it was 89. So Paul went down in 89. He was snoring on the field in 1989. I know we shouldn't joke about it, but we do. And Paul, did you coach out the rest of that year kind of as like a player coach type?
They didn't count that as a year of coaching, but I think the last five games I started going to all the meetings and traveling, and I was up in the press box. So they were building my transition at that point.
Yeah. So from your standpoint as a coach, were you rooting for Andy Reid a little bit? I feel like that guy, I just like him so much. There was a really good interview of him and with Jimmy Johnson before the game that I thought just brought out everything that he's about. As far as coaching goes, he's got to be one of the more sentimental favorites.
Well, he's a special guy. I mean, everybody that knows him has said nothing but great things. I have one story about him that made me go, okay, this is a pretty special human being. One of my best friend, actually was my best friend all through high school and college. His son played baseball at Arizona State, freshman year, slides into second base head first, breaks his neck, and he's paralyzed from the chest down. And there was some news going on there. Long story short, they fly him to a facility a few weeks after in California, and Andy Reid called my best friend and took him to dinner and spent hours with Corey, his son, in the hospital and my friend. Didn't have to do it. Didn't know him, but went out of his way to do it because he felt compelled to. So just to give you a little idea about how special Andy Reid is, there's a story for you.
Hey, Paul, when you say that Mahomes had an off game for him last night, I'd agree with you, but what does that say about the rest of his career? And if he's capable of winning with the Chiefs having a game like that, what do you think the next decade portends for him?
Well, yeah, it's going to be tough for the league. He's such a special talent. And, Andy Reid talked about it, after the game and I think this morning that he's the greatest player he's ever seen on film. And his throws, he was off. He was throwing them low. He was throwing them behind Hill on that one interception. He made the worst interception I can remember, in Super Bowl, at least watching him in his first interception. So he made a lot of bad throws. And I would even say the play that really just sparked them, that 44-yarder on third down and 15, that was a fantastic route by Tyreek Hill. It was a better route than it was a throw. But, he started getting comfortable, and here's a guy, even in his off day, can win a Super Bowl. So, man, you know, he's, if he stays healthy, he probably will end up someday going down. If not the greatest quarterback, but he's going to be one of the top quarterbacks of all time.
Yeah, I agree with you on Mahomes. I thought up and through the third quarter, he was not playing well. We hadn't seen that. And then you look at the fourth quarter box score on this, Paul, and you see this is, you know, where the great ones step up when everything's on the line. Yep. And it gets as intense as it does. He was 10 of 17 for 141 yards and two touchdowns. Did throw one pick in that quarter, but a quarterback rating of 100.4. You look over at Garoppolo, who you could make the case was outplaying him. Not that he was electric, but pretty steady through three quarters. In the fourth quarter, Garoppolo's 3 of 11 for 36 yards and a pick. Quarterback rating of 2.8.
Yeah, that's not going to get it done. And look, I think we all
you don't think so.
No, well, it obviously it didn't, did it? And you know, I could not have rooted harder against the team more than I was rooting against the 49ers. I mean, I don't like them, and we all know that. But you know, Garoppolo, he's capable. I think he's on a good team. He is on a fantastic football team, and the things are going the way their game plan sets with play action and screens. I think he was 9 for 11. On throws 5 yards or less, and he was something like 9 for 9 on throws over 5 yards with 2 interceptions. You know, he's just not a guy who can consistently make a contested throw that has to beat you. That doesn't mean he never will. He completed one pass of 10 yards, and we've talked about this forever, one pass of over 10 yards outside the numbers. He doesn't have a strong arm that really spins it. Now, he throws great slant routes. He can manage the game with screens, and he can beat you. But when you get in the Super Bowl and you've got to make contested throws and step up big time, we saw it. I mean, that was the difference of the game. It was an evenly played game, and it was came down to who the best quarterback was, and Mahomes was definitely superior.
Did you see a lack of faith from the 49ers coaching staff in him in the way that they called some of the plays out there? Because people point to Shanahan and say, yeah, well, he got conservative because he doesn't totally believe in Garoppolo, whereas some looked at it as more, no, he feared giving the ball back to Patrick Mahomes. It was more about what Mahomes could do versus what Garoppolo couldn't do. How did you view the play calling?
Well, it's, yeah, and it's both of those, isn't it? You know, it's, oh, man, I've got a quarterback that I'm concerned if we're backed up and there's a minute and a half left. They had 3 timeouts left, Kansas City did, that if we give them the ball, you know, with at midfield or just past midfield with 3, you know, over a minute, you know, they're going to come down and score. I want at least to be tied or, you know, have the lead going into halftime. This is why head coaches, you know, get paid the big bucks, and that is, what's the best way for us to win the football game? You know, we can go after, I don't trust Garoppolo, and I don't think they do in that situation. But it almost played out for him, you know, because I was moaning. I said, well, I've never seen a coach with a good quarterback, and I think Garoppolo is a good quarterback, not call a timeout with a minute 50 left when the other team is about to punt the football. I thought that was crazy.
And 3 timeouts to work with.
And 3, exactly. And so, but again, that ball could have been down at the 1 yard line if the guy made the play. He probably should have. And now they're backed up, and Kansas City's got 3 timeouts. And, you know, that's always, you know, second guessing. If they had a won, they were up 20-10. They probably should have won the football game, and nobody's second guessing that. But I think Shanahan's got a tough go over the next few years, because one, it's tough to get there. We know how hard it is to get to the Super Bowl. They're young. They've got a really good football team that I don't think is going away for a few years. But man, you get into those tight situations, fourth quarter situations, you try to push the history away, but in that big moment, it's going to creep back in on you. And he's now had 2 rough fourth quarter moments in Super Bowls. I just think that's going to live with him for a long time.
Yeah, and it was so bad, Paul, that we understand that down in San Francisco they're saying that a guy like Pete Carroll would have been much better in that situation.
Yeah, you got to love that, right?
Yeah.
You know, everybody has their own philosophy. You know, we've got Kansas City who had they went for 4 downs, I think, the least amount of any NFL team this year, maybe because they didn't have to. And then they go for a couple in this game. If one of those doesn't work, you know, or if both of them didn't work, you know, they get second guessed like crazy. So I rarely question those type of calls. And, you know, are you too aggressive? Are you not aggressive enough? Because it really was. He wasn't aggressive enough towards the end of the half, talking about Shanahan.
Yeah.
And then in the second half, they weren't running the football enough. You know, you just got to make plays. And the plays were there for the 49ers to win. And again, I'm just so happy they didn't win.
Paul, a text from the 425. Moyer was one of my favorite baseball coaches in Little League. Love you, Paul. Thanks for the nickname, the Sheriff.
Whew, man, they're going back some.
No, I don't expect you to remember this
on
one.
He's
going, who's the Sheriff? I've had guys come up from 2001 when I coached at Redmond High School, and they're grown men now. And I'm like, who are you? And you yeah, so, and then they tell you, yeah, but when you've coached that many kids, but. Hey, so
we've coached a bunch. And Dave, and by the way, I walk in a room and you go, who are you?
Yeah, that's so, true, too. And we're like best of friends. So, yeah, that's.
Yes, we are.
Right. Hey, Paul, let me ask you about this. We were just sort of mulling this over. What do you think Sherman's reaction is going to be here? Because, you know, he's the guy that has to be in that San Francisco locker room imploring his teammates to not point fingers and let's get past this. And yet he was the guy who probably most couldn't get past it in Super Bowl 49. And it'll just be interesting, don't you think, to see what do you think his reaction is going to be, how he's going to – Sherman's going to come out of this. I thought he got humbled a little bit on a few plays as well.
Well, Sherm's not one to shy away from controversy, but he is one of those. And last year is a perfect example. I mean, he did not play well last year. And granted, he was coming off – you know, the Achilles injury, his statistically, he played very poor. We didn't hear a peep from him. And then this year he had a couple interceptions, and then, you know, some of the ratings were saying, you're the best corner, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden his, you know, he got confident again. I'll just keep it as simple as I can there. Cause I like Richard. I just wish he would be quiet and go play. The challenge for him is he's not going to get better. You know, he's hit his mark, and, you know, you're going to see diminishing returns. And I really thought that they would attack him in this game because he's susceptible to double moves. He guesses on routes, and if you have time, you can hurt him. And he guessed on that last route. He had, you know, the guy got a little bit in front of him or over the shoulders on him, and he jumped inside even though he had help, you know, over the top in the post. I thought he guessed. I think that he thought the guy was going to run an in route by the way he stemmed coming off the line. And, you know, you got to own up to it. So, and then he was out of position on that last touchdown as well. So, you know, I don't really care, but at the same time, I don't think we're going to hear from Richard for a while. I think he's going to kind of be quiet and be humble.
Hey, Paul, Jim just asked me this question, and I'll ask you as a coach, what would you do with him? I mean, he's still a really smart player. He does not shy away from contact. He had a couple of tackles in there where he's a tough one. Would you move him inside? Would he be a guy that at this point in his career at, what, 32, you move to safety? You think he can make that adjustment?
Well, he definitely could make that adjustment. I still think he has a couple of years left at corner, and mainly it's because of the way they play defense. And, you know, if you play the type of technique they do and pat and read hard and jump the short stuff knowing that four guys are going to get to the pass rush, with the pass rush, he can be productive, and he is good. He is one of the best I've ever seen at pattern recognition. And he, even in this game, and there was times he guessed and there was guys wide open and Mahomes just didn't find them. But if he wants to play, that's the trick. It's how much longer do you really want to play? Because now as a safety, you are now hitting a lot. And so you are getting your head hit, and, you know, how much do you care, you know, long-term about, you know, those types of things. So, but if he wants to play, I absolutely would move him inside. He's got the size and the toughness and obviously the smarts.
Hey, Paul, Frank Clark had 5 sacks in the playoffs this year, including the one that essentially clinched the game for the Chiefs last night. Did it make you feel at all that, maybe the Seahawks should have kept him and signed him and not gotten Clowney, or did any of those thoughts even come close to entering your mind at all?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, you're looking at Sherman, you know, all the guys we lost, and they had good careers. And, you know, Frank Clark was a guy, you know, everybody got to know, and you wish him well. And he's a fantastic football player. He's just, you know, sometimes you got to look at how much money you have and where are we going to spend it and how do we play that out. I thought the way, obviously, the Seahawks went into the season, us getting Clowney, the type of draft picks we've got, you know, it worked out going into the season. But you can't replace a guy like him. I mean, he's truly one of the best pass rushers, and I would love to have him. It's just in this day and age, you got to decide where you're going to spend your money. And I'm happy for him. You know, I, this isn't about the Seahawks. Oh, woe is me. But let me tell you what, we got to go try and find another Frank Clark, because you saw what kind of damage and the big plays he was making and how that affected the game.
Yeah, you know, what was interesting is I was going back and forth with somebody on Twitter who was like, man, I hate that the Seahawks traded him or something along those lines. And I'm like, what's he done up to this point? He hadn't recorded a single tackle. I mean, he was fairly anonymous and quiet throughout the game until the very end of the game, which I guess is all that matters. But it seemed like a weird year for Clark, and that he had maybe an injury he was dealing with. He had, through the first six games, people were ripping the deal, and, you know, he hasn't done anything here. He was kind of hot and cold. You'd have those big games, those big moments, and then you wouldn't hear anything.
Well, he's also the kind of – and he is a good run defender. I mean, he's not the biggest guy, but he certainly isn't a horrible run defensive end. He's got a lot of help inside, too. I mean, it's not like he's getting double-teamed every time like Clowney is. So he's productive. And in the fourth quarter, when, you know, all of a sudden you have a lead – and you want to have guys like that. And that's obviously where he's going to be most productive. But he's going to have a good career. I mean, this guy's still hungry. And so, you know, for us Seahawks fans, just know he's going to have success. I mean, that's just life. You know, put it behind you, root for him, and hope we find someone in a draft or free agency this year, because Frank Clark's not going away either. He's going to be pretty productive for a long time.
All right, Paul, I'm once again calling on you as a coach. Trey Flowers, to me, he had three interceptions. I thought he's physical. I thought his biggest problem is not trusting himself. And, you know, the pass interference penalties that he will sometimes commit unnecessarily. But, you know, he kind of struggled in the playoffs and later in the season. How would you sum up Trey Flowers' career? I mean, not career, but his season this last year.
Well, I think Trey played well for Trey. I mean, this is a guy, and we talked about this. This is his second year ever playing corner. He's doing it in the NFL against the greatest, fastest guys in the world. That's a tough position. On top of that, we didn't have a great pass rush. If he played for San Francisco this year, there'd be some people saying, this guy's the real deal. If that ball has to come out in 2.5 seconds every single time, you can trust routes. And then if you have a free safety that can really, you know, run as well and protect you over the top at times, and that's what Sherman made a living off of, you know, when he was here with the Seahawks. He's going to be a good corner. That doesn't mean we don't bring someone in here to absolutely compete with him and make him better. He's got to get better. We've got to have two corners that you can count on if the ball is being held for 3.5 seconds, that they can still run with these guys and cross them routes, so on and so forth. But I think he played well for a guy who's your right side corner, really your second corner, against a team that had less than 30 sacks. You know, at some point you just got to say, hey, he's going to give up some things. But I think his best football, there's no question, is ahead of him. He's going to get better and better as he keeps getting more experience.
All right, Paul, we've been giving you a bunch of softball questions here. Are you ready for a hard-hitting one?
I thought that was a tough one.
Was it? Okay. Well, I've got an even tougher one. You ready?
Okay.
All right. Yeah. What'd you think of the halftime show?
Jim, I guess it depends. If I was with a bunch of guys who were 50 years old and they were all single, and I guess I would say, wow, that's a great halftime show. I'm sitting there next to, which we were, a couple of kids that were under 10 years old. I'm going, okay, you guys are out. No more halftime shows here to watch. Look, it's a halftime show. To be honest, Jim, I have no idea why they do the halftime show. They don't pay those entertainers anyways. They're not making any money. They're not running any commercials. I'd rather go up, you know, grab a beer, some chips, get refreshed, watch a few more commercials, and let's get after it.
What was your favorite commercial, by the way?
I thought that the Rocket Mortgage one was pretty funny.
The Aquaman?
He started peeling his things off there.
The skinny guy. Paul, you think exactly like I do, because I was thinking the other way around, that you could put the muscles on, and actually that would, at age 50 plus, would really do you some good.
That was a good commercial.
That was a good one. And then probably, you know, Bill Murray's, you know, the Groundhog Day one. That was, you know, that's, you know, you're going back to a movie I've seen 100 times. So over and over again. But no, it, you know, I thought that was pretty good.
But they brought in his brother. They brought in Needle Nose Ned and the whole thing. So I agree. I forgot all about that. That was pretty cool. But yeah, I did like what is his name? Jason Momoa? Is that his name?
I think Aquaman.
That's Aquaman. His name. I just liked him at the end when he's struggling with the bar. Go, take it. And she's like, all right, exactly. I got it. That was hilarious.
That did look like me.
Hey,
so that's why I could definitely relate to it.
Hey, Paul, quickly, you know, we all as Seahawk fans feel like, oh man, Russell would have completed that pass and Pete would have made this call and all that. But ultimately, I looked at that game and I said, man, this Seahawks defense this year against that Chiefs offense, I don't think it would have been a very pretty outcome, in my opinion. How do you think it would have gone?
Well, it's like anything. It could have been very similar to the first half, and that is you run the football. The Chiefs, you know, throughout the year weren't great at stopping the run. If you can control the clock and you limit the possessions to one or two a quarter, and then you get to the fourth quarter, everything's tight. Look, the Seahawks are always in a game, so of course it would have been a game. But that would have been a tough one to win in the fourth quarter where you're saying, okay, we've got to make a stop with the kind of speed that they have. That's a Olympic track team. And, it would have been tough. So I think the best team ended up winning, the Super Bowl. And they proved it.
Paul, good to talk to you, man. Thanks so much for stepping in once again. We appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
Man, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
There you go. There's Paul Moyer, our buddy. Again, you hear him on the Seahawks pregame show, halftime show, postgame show. Does a great job with that.
He's really good. I enjoy talking to him.
Oh, he's always really good, yeah.
Coach Moyer.
Coach Moyer.
You know, yeah. I didn't like Paul in the very beginning when I was a rookie. We were in the same huddle because he was a second stringer, which I like to point out. Why were you in the second string huddle?
Is he a year ahead of you?
He came in like 84, I think.
And you were
87.
87, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was a grizzled old vet.
And I said something one time, I was calling the huddle. He's like, hey, come on, rookie. Call the huddle better. Let's go. Get back in here and do it again. And I was just looking at him like,
that's a jerk.
Yeah, who is this guy?
And now look at you.
Yeah, and then one time I was popping off on the plane coming back. I was talking to Gail Gilbert, and we'd had a couple of adult beverages, and he turned around and was like, hey, rookie, why don't you shut up? And I looked at him and I said, why don't you come back here and make me shut up?
Uh-oh.
Like you're back in school again.
Oh, yeah.
The grade school.
Exactly. Wow. So anyway, but now.
Fast forward, you're both adults and you're bestest pals. Mostly adults. But bestest buddies ever. All right, coming up, has Russell Wilson joined the, and she wrote this, I'm just telling you right now, Dave, Let Russell Cook movement. It almost sounded like it during a Pro Football
Who's
Talk
she?
Interview. That would be Linda.
You talking about Maura?
Yeah. We'll let you.
She's just trying to needle me for no good reason.
She's very
Next
subtle.
Thing you know, she'll start talking about single high safeties.
You listen to what he says. It sounds a little reminiscent of the Seahawks Twitter movement to let him cook.
Well, we'll let everybody make their own decision. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and Maura on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Our thanks to Paul Moyer for sitting in for the professor in the previous segment. If you missed any of that, it'll be up there for you on the podcast page after the show, 710sports.com. Also, another reminder, you can watch the show. We've got a brand new video feature. If you head to 710sports.com and you click Watch Live, you can jump in and watch the show. You can see they've got cameras in the studio behind us with Maura back there. You can see how this whole thing is put together. All the buttons being pushed.
Matt Nelson back there.
Matt can't wait for you to have a view of him. He wore his best clothes today. He's ready for that. I mean, everybody's really excited. And you can chat.
I think Matt feels the same way I do. The whole point of me getting into this medium was so that I wouldn't have to be, I could pick my nose, I could wear crappy clothes, and don't care how I look.
The camera's directly on you.
Yeah, apparently every time you talk,
yeah,
it comes.
Yeah, Matt, we don't need say that. Something.
But now I'm going to be on camera. I don't
want to. Yeah, see, you don't want to say anything. I'm with you on that, brother.
So, yeah, you guys can check it out. 710sports.com. Click the Watch Live button, and that'll bring you up to the video stream. You can see the control room, see the studio, all of that. And, again, you can jump in on the chat with whoever else is up there. So there's that bit of fun.
425 says, does the live feed mean that you all have to wear pants now?
Yes. Unfortunately, Jim's most depressed about that. But yes, we do have to wear pants.
If Jim doesn't have pants on, it's because he forgot.
Yeah.
Could happen. Tell you what I never forget, though, is wearing something with a Cougar logo on it.
It's that's a rare day.
That
it's
doesn't
like
happen very
maybe
often.
Maybe once a month that happens, if that. Meanwhile, we were posing the question, has Russell joined the Let Russell Cook movement? And that comes on the heels of an interview he did pre-Super Bowl with Pro Football Talk and talked about getting the Seahawks offense started earlier.
I think that's what we got to figure out, you know, as we go on throughout the, you know, this offseason, and we're trying to capture that earlier on. Because I think we do it really well. I mean, we've always been really good at two-minute offense. We've always been really good in those end of the half, those not always hurry-up situations, but those up-tempo moments. Yeah. And the reality is this. I think the defense gets tired, first thing.
Sure,
right. The second thing is that, I really know kind of what I want to, you know, get after them and how we want to get after them, especially in those moments. And guys just make plays in those moments. I think the freedom of just going after and just scoring as many points, you know, that's kind of what the Chiefs do, to be honest with you. They do a really good job. Andy Reid and Mahomes, they do a really good job of getting up to the ball, playing with their playmakers, and finding a way to make plays. And, you know, they score more points than everybody else. And I think that's the name of the game is, can you score one more point than they do?
Right.
And there's different ways to go about it. Listen, the reality is we've won a lot of football games over the years.
I know. But we're holding you to a very high standard.
But we also, I think there's also the expectation of being here, not just sitting here in this seat next to you guys, unfortunately.
Yeah, right. Being on the big banner here at the Super Bowl.
But being on the big banner and winning it all.
So what do you think? Is he campaigning for the Let Russell Cook? Is he part of that? Or is, to me, I listened to that and said, that's a guy who's a fan of up-tempo. It's not about let me throw it more often. It's about the pace. And we had talked about this before, Dave, where I agreed that, listen, he doesn't need to throw the ball 30, 32 times, 35 times a game. I'm not for that. But I'm for maybe throwing in different scenarios, different situations. And the pace, definitely. I think what he's saying is absolutely true for anybody that's watched this team function in that two-minute offense. They seem to find it for whatever reason. It just seems like they do function well in that.
Seems like it, but sometimes not. How come nobody ever talks about the offensive line getting tired? It's always like, it's hurry up, and it's like, oh, the defense is getting tired.
Which of those two lines are expending more energy, though? The guys that are pushing, trying to get to the quarterback, and the other standing in front of them?
Which ones are bigger slobs? Offensive linemen.
I'm not going to call them slobs.
Yeah.
But
I wouldn't call Dwayne Brown that.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's that easy.
More energy on defense to try to get to the quarterback. You're chasing Russell around. You're chasing receivers. So.
I suppose. I don't know. I mean, they're bigger and strong. I mean, I'll tell you what's hard is pushing on another guy. I mean, when you're out on the field, blocking is tough, man. That's like running a 40-yard, you know, route downfield for the smaller guys. But, no, anything. Look, I'm open to suggestions. I'm sure everybody is. I'm certain that Russ is open to trying to find new ways. They're slow starters. And, you know, just a way to get them going, get them going early. It's amazing the number. I mean, a lot of the reason why he has these fourth quarter comeback numbers, which I think it's up to like 29 now. No, it's like 32 because they start so slow. So, yeah, maybe there's something there. But, I mean, look at what happened with look what happened with the 49ers. I mean, they had a really good thing going, and it just didn't work there. And so, like he said there, they won a lot of games this year, man. They won 11 games. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and 12 if you count the playoffs. So, you know, I don't think that there's anything drastic that needs to be done, but why not try and work with some new things? Maybe it's that. Maybe it's different select, you know, calls at different times. You know, how about, and I think if somebody wants to say this as far as modern, what about some of the trick plays? That, you know, what about the reverse that Deebo Samuel ran? And I don't know if you guys remember this. You probably do. But they ran one where he was going to throw.
And oh, yeah. He was getting ready to throw.
Yeah, it was in the first half. The defense entirely did not bite on that. I mean, they were covered up all the way downfield. So sometimes if you go and try to do too much of that stuff. But what's really worked for the 49ers this year? Old school running plays. So, yeah, I mean, look, you're always trying to get – and if I was Schottenheimer, and certainly if I was Pete Carroll – and they probably already thought of this. They're going to go and talk to Russ after the season. Say, what do you think? What would you like to see happen here?
What if he said, I'd like to go a little more up-tempo? Is that fair?
Sure. I guarantee you they've had that conversation already. I mean, this has been talked about for years by us, so you know that we're always the last ones to get there. They do this for a living. They're spending hours and hours and hours of planning. So to me, you know, I don't think it's certainly – I don't have any problem with it, but I don't think you're going to see some big drastic thing like Russell Wilson calling the plays. But maybe on a few series he'll get into, you know, some kind of a rhythm where – because remember his helmet went out in Cleveland.
Right.
And he couldn't hear the, you know, the offensive coordinator in his head, and so they were doing some things. But I just, you know, when everybody says, well, there's, you know, this needs to change, it's not going to be some wholesale change because they don't need to. They were a top 10 offense this year. But, you know, little things that suit Russell Wilson and certainly the personnel that are around him, sure, why not? But, you know, I just don't think that is some kind of thing that needs to be talked about, like there's this big drastic change that needs to come. Do you? I mean,
well, yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking that something that you usually say, Dave, is like, well, don't you think they've already thought of that? And you're right. We've talked about this for 2 or 3 years, but this is the first time I've heard Russell just basically say, yeah, maybe that's something we should try. Now, last week we heard that he wants more superstars, probably on defense. And then today we're hearing from his Pro Football Talk interview that he wants to go more up tempo. And so, yeah, why not give it a try? The only downside that I could see is that when you do that, if it's not successful, you can have some quick three and outs, and then I think it's probably more conducive to do this type of offense when you have a better defense than what Seattle has right now. But, Dave, I was thinking of you yesterday when they Kansas City came out there and they used that play where they did the spin.
Pirouette, yeah.
Yeah, the pirouette, and then they did the straight
direct snap
to Damian Williams. Well, you know, so much for modernizing football. I thought, wow, that's a really cool new play. And then you see where Eric Bieniemy said that he got it from
1948.
Yeah, the 1948 Rose Bowl. So.
But they put the pirouette on it. They didn't do that in the original.
Oh, they didn't?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, it looked like the bye, bye, bye dance.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah. I'm like, what the hell are they doing? That was a fourth down call, too.
Yeah, I heard Bieniemy say he was reluctant to mention the 1948, you know, because everybody will think. But, yeah, I mean, look, everything that's old is new again. And, you know, there's a great book called Blood, Sweat, and Chalk, and it talks about all of these things that we think are new now that have been in play, like the single wing is what I ran in high school. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much the wildcat. You know, there's lots of different little things that everybody thinks are brand new, but they're older concepts. You just trot them out there again.
All right, coming up, Frank Clark has a message for anyone who doubted him. We're going to hear that next when we sweep the dial. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
That's how it worked. I'm a champion. I knew it was coming. It was time. You know, 5 years, no ring, man. It was time. I can't wait, man. I can't wait till that ceremony, man, when I'm able to put it. They asked me what finger I wanted on a few months ago. I told my middle finger, you know, because how I feel about everybody. That's just how I feel. They counted me out my whole life, and now look at me. I'm a champion forever.
That's the voice of the Super Bowl champion that is Frank Clark. Boy, he's become a lot more vocal, hasn't he? Wants the ring on his middle finger so he can give it to whoever doubted him, I guess.
Are there really that many doubters, Frank?
No, I know. Who counted them out?
You're a fantastic athlete.
Him out at Michigan when they booted him out.
Well, yeah. That was other things.
That did happen.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, guys need that, I think. I think players need that. I didn't mind it.
The chip?
When I went to Denver, there weren't very many players that gave me very much respect. Like Elway did. And, you know, some of the linemen are like, wait, how many years were you in Seattle? I'm like, well, we played you twice a year, and I started every game, so I don't know what you're talking about. And then, you know, in the newspaper, you know, they're kind of like, who's this guy, blah, blah, blah. So I like that, and I used it as a chip, but
yeah.
I'm not sure who all is. Thing is, though, he's on Twitter, so he's getting it from everybody.
Yeah, and he was also, again, the beginning of the year through the first six games, I think he had 2 sacks. And there were articles being written about, you know, was this deal a mistake? And Frank Clark hasn't done anything, which was true.
I think it was injury related, though. I think part of it.
Yeah, it seems like we're hearing that maybe after the fact a little bit. But Yeah, so he was probably consuming all of that, like, hey, man, I'm injured, and I'm not – these guys are ripping me to pieces. So, yeah, I get it. He's the whole third-person thing, though, threw me off with him, that cut we had the other day of him. You know, you're going to see Frank Clark out there, and when Frank Clark does this, I'm like, oh, my God.
Bob, Dave Please. Wyman thinks it's okay. Dave Wyman doesn't have a
Dave
problem.
Dave Wyman is making Bob Stelton really uncomfortable with all this, just the way Frank Clark does.
Well, it is what it is. You know, we didn't execute at the end. They got the win. Guys weren't really tired, just didn't execute at the end. There was, you know, we just didn't execute at the end. We got to execute the full four quarters. We're still a great defense. You got to execute at the end, though. You know, they got to work hard. You know, this is what happens. You go out there, you execute. You don't execute, you lose again. Guys knew what we needed to do to win that game, and we didn't execute. Yeah, we felt confident the whole game, you know, but you got to execute.
So I guess bottom line is you didn't execute, according to Richard Sherman.
If I was an interviewer, I know you guys are maybe more dogged than I am. I would have checked out after like the second execute.
You would have just got up and walked out.
Yeah, just all right. That's apparently all we're gonna get from you.
Yeah, is he a
poor sport?
I think a little bit. Yeah. I think Michael Bennett was a bit of a poor sport. We saw him at the end of games where it's the kneel down and he's busting through the line and all that. At certain guys who are. Don't handle losing very well. I think he's one of them who will make excuses. And then, you know, even when they lose, we saw how he qualified. Well, they, you know, kind of protected Russell, or they didn't ask him to do much when they beat him last year.
Thing is, why even come out and take questions if you're just going to answer with the same answer every single time?
Well, I give him credit for doing that rather than just hiding in the locker room and not speaking to anybody.
Yeah, it's got to be. And whatever you think about Richard Sherman, losing the Super Bowl and you got to go out and answer a bunch of questions, it's not fun for anybody, but there's a better way to handle it. But I understand that, after losses, sometimes athletes just don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Jim, because I typically stay, you know, I'm on the side of the players. And, yeah, there was times where I just didn't want to talk about it. But, yeah, I don't know about just – saying the same hokey thing over and over. I always felt like I realized that these guys were just doing their job. That's how
it's
talking
really,
about the
I think
media.
I treated the it's media. Really hard when you go into a locker room and try and come up with a decent question
after a loss. Oh, it's brutal. Try going in that Mariners clubhouse.
Ooh. Oh, I can't imagine you guys do that. I don't like going in the locker room. And, you know, just because once I left, I felt like that's it for me. I don't want to go in the locker room and ask questions. I had to do that one time in 2004. I filled in for Moyer on the sideline, and they lost in New York, and I had to go in there and ask questions. And, you know, first I went to, believe it or not, Jeremy Stevens was a great go-to guy. You would get good quotes out of him. And then, of course, Hasselbeck and Max Strong. But, I mean, I hated that so bad. It was the worst
job. It's
not fun. After a loss...
Because you're trying to tiptoe around, too. Jim, maybe you go in with a sledgehammer, but I always find myself trying to ask the question in a nice way. Like, basically, why did you guys stink tonight? But you're not putting it that way.
It always bothers me when Matt Nelson laughs.
Why?
At a remark like that. Because he's my guy in there.
He's got a good sense of humor. That's why.
Thought you were my guy, but...
I'm sorry, Jim. It was funny.
Don't ever laugh at Jim's expense. When it's at his expense, you are to stay stone-faced.
Like you said, he knows you.
Well, yeah, but you know what's funny to me, too, is that like when you go in there to ask questions and somebody will say, well, that was a stupid question, you know, if they hear it on TV or radio or whatever, well, it's not that easy. You're trying to come up with a good question, but you're limited.
Yeah. And you're trying to ask a question that'll not seem confrontational, yet will elicit an answer from the guy who's really, really pissed at that moment. So
yeah,
it's a delicate
Sherman
balance.
Supposed to say if somebody said, hey, you got beat by Sammy Watkins, what happened on that play? What's he going to say?
Didn't execute.
Yeah.
So he should have said, well, I got fooled, man. I thought he was going to run an out, and he ran in. And
yeah. Good play by him.
No, you wouldn't want to say that.
Good play by him.
Give that stuff up. You want to give him as much or as little as possible.
He's one of these guys who, hey, you see who's in here right now. This is the guy who kind of like gets it all going. Scott, SVP is on there, Coach.
Congrats,
he's
Andy.
He's on there. Okay, you know what? Let's just do this. How about we just do this? Watch this. Here, ready?
Right.
Watch.
All right. Hey, Coach, it's Scott Van Pelt. Congratulations. Can you hear me?
Hey, Scotty. How you doing? Yeah, no, I can hear you. I got you, man.
Not as well as you.
I think the only people that weren't feeling good for Andy Reid would be 49er fans. Outside of the rest of the football nation seemed to just be, hey, good for Andy. No matter who you were a fan of, no matter what team you rooted for, everybody's like, you know what, good for him, man. Good to see this guy who just seems universally liked. Couldn't have been more likable. He's trying to push all the attention to his wife during the post-game interviews. And it just, I watched it and said, man, this guy couldn't be more likable. Could not, if it's not the Seahawks winning, I'm glad it was him and Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, especially, what, 21 years going without a Super Bowl victory. And so now being on the cusp of the Hall of Fame and then finally making it with a Super Bowl victory, and everybody knows that Andy Reid's in now.
Yeah, did you see the quote? He said it, they asked him if he's going to spend the night with the Super Bowl trophy. He said he's going to spend the night with his trophy wife.
Oh, big points there. Right?
Big points.
There.
Very nice.
Yeah. He just, and much maligned. This guy took a lot of heat in Philadelphia, and even the Eagles tweeted out a little, you know, I can't remember what it would say. The time's yours, Andy, or something like that. But something that was pretty cool and classy, and we'll talk to El Hombre tomorrow about it. But I would imagine even Eagles fans who were ripping him because he never won the big game, did a lot of winning in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
a lot of winning out there. So good to see him finally get over the mountaintop and come away with a title, and he will be in the Hall of Fame. All right, coming up, there are some sad 49ers fans and radio hosts on the air today, and we're gonna be petty. We're going to be small. Take joy in their misery. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.